Thank you all very much for coming here this evening. Actually, the seminar I originally thought of giving this time was on Srimad Bhagavatam. And the other day, in New Vrindavan, when we were in New Vrindavan, I was discussing with Mother Krishna Priya about the seminar, and then I realized to cover or to do justice to Srimad Bhagavatam in 4 days, 2 hour sessions will not be possible. Therefore, I was thinking that I have to give a seminar on some topic. Rather, instead of presenting the entire Srimad Bhagavatam, I thought of selecting some specific topic from Srimad Bhagavatam and give a seminar on that. And then it occurred to me that recently, in South Africa, I saw that there was a big advertisement, many billboards and many posters announcing the seminar that would be given by someone from India, a spiritualist from India. And the title of that seminar was The Art of Living. And when I saw that poster, I was thinking that actually sadhu's business is not to give a seminar on art of living. Because whenever one takes to spiritual life, one thing one realizes that the real goal of life is not here, is beyond this material nature. And then it occurred to me, why don't I give a seminar on art of dying? And then it occurred to me that actually Srimad Bhagavatam is extensively dealing with this topic. The art of dying. And that art of dying is actually leading to the way to immortality. If one knows how to die, then he attains immortality. He attains immortal life. So that is the ultimate objective of spiritual persuasion, spiritual pursuit. So, like when we, and I, it occurred to me at that time that actually this would be an appropriate topic to give a seminar on. The art of dying, the way to immortality. And Srimad Bhagavatam is actually Srimad Bhagavatam is actually teaching us that art. Although Srimad Bhagavatam originated when Vasudev was summarizing the teachings of the Vedas and trying to present it in such a way that the disturbed and distressed, short-lived living entities of this age of Kali could understand the purpose of Srimad Bhagavatam or purpose of the Vedic wisdom. And he very systematically analyzed the Vedic wisdom. Like first he divided the Vedas into 4, then he wrote different aspects of Vedic wisdom, like Dharma Shastra, Itihash, Puran, Upanishad. These are different branches, or Darshan. And these are all different branches of the Vedic wisdom. And finally he presented the summary of the essential understanding of the entire Vedic wisdom in the form of Vedanta Sutra. the aphorisms of Vedanta. And still, when he was not feeling totally content, then Narad Muni appeared to him and instructed him to present Srimad Bhagavatam, which is the unalloyed glorification of the Supreme Personality of Godhead. And in this way, Srimad Bhagavatam was presented by Srila Vasudev as the summary, as the essence of the entire Vedic wisdom. Nigama kalpa tarur galitang phalam, the ripened fruit of the desire tree of the Vedic wisdom. So that is what Srimad Bhagavatam was, as it was presented by Srila Vasudev. But then, Sukamukhad Amrita Drava Samjutam. This Srimad Bhagavatam became further, got its nectarian aspect due to the presentation of Sukadev Goswami. So, the real presentation of Srimad Bhagavatam was actually made by Srila Sukadev Goswami. But what was the occasion is very interesting. What was the occasion of that presentation? The king of this planet, Maharaj Parikshit, he was cursed by the person, by Kali, the personality who is predominating this age, whose business is to establish irreligiosity, his business is to introduce sinful activities and promote sinful life. That personality, Kali, considered Parikshit Maharaj to be the arch enemy, his arch enemy. And he realized that in order to establish his purpose, in order to establish himself or his objective, he has to get rid of this king, Parikshit Maharaj. And he didn't have the means or the ability to get rid of Parikshit Maharaj. Parikshit Maharaj was actually too powerful for him. Therefore, he arranged that a Brahmana boy would curse him. And this boy was so powerful, although he was just a boy of 7-8 years old, but he cursed Parikshit Maharaj. That's a long story. I am skipping the details. I'm sure all of you know what the occasion was. And so this Brahmana boy cursed Parikshit Maharaj that he would die within 7 days. And when Parikshit Maharaj got the news that he has been cursed, that he is going to die in 7 days, or he has only 7 days left. So Parikshit Maharaj did not try to counteract the curse. He just left everything. He left his kingdom, he left his palace, he left his family, left everything. And he went to the bank of the Ganges in order to prepare himself for this occasion of dying. That in 7 days, he has 7 days to die. So, okay, let me take advantage of the second 7 days and prepare myself to die. And he just sat down. Although he was a king, and not only the king, he was the king of the entire earth planet, including the oceans. That is how it has been described. Sa Sagara. Sagara means ocean. Sa means along with or including. So he was the ruler of the earth planet, including the oceans. So entire planet. But he became completely detached because he knew. To begin with, he knew that someday he'll have to leave this world. A person who is situated in knowledge He knows that one day he'll have to die. Jatasya hi dhruvar mrittu. Dhruvang janma mritasya cha. One who is born, he is bound to die. The word dhruva, dhruva means fixed, unwavering, or you can say absolute truth. This truth is unavoidable, isn't it? In the material nature, although this material nature is a relative reality, here everything is relative. But there is only one absolute truth in this material nature. What is that absolute truth? Death. Everybody has to die. Even in this relative reality, there is one absolute truth, that is death. So one who is situated in knowledge, he knows that he'll have to die. But those who are ignorant, they try to avoid death. Well, it's natural that one does, actually in reality, one doesn't want to die. But in order to understand how to attain immortality, one must first know what death is. What is death? Then only we can understand how to conquer death. If you don't know who is your enemy, is there any question of defeating him? Can you defeat or conquer an enemy whom you do not know? Therefore, in order to conquer your enemy, what do you have to do? First of all, you have to recognize him. Who is he? What is he? What is his strength? And how he can harm me? And then you take the action to counter that influence. So those who are situated in knowledge, they know death is inevitable. Someday or other, death is going to come. Therefore, one who is situated in knowledge, he doesn't get bewildered with this issue of death. Rather, he prepares himself for that. Just like Parikshit Maharaj did. And this is an indication that he was situated in knowledge. Parikshit Maharaj was a king. He could have made so many different arrangements to counteract that. And actually, if he wanted, he could have. He could have. You know how? Just to give one example, Parikshit Maharaj was cursed that he would be killed by being bitten by a serpent, a celestial serpent called Takshak. So there was one, you can say, snake doctor. The poison, you know, like expert of counteracting poison. His name was Kashyapa, a sage, a saintly person. He was a brahmana, a sage. So he was, he heard that the king is going to be bitten by a snake. So he said, okay, fine, I will counteract it. So he was going to Parikshit Maharaj. At that time, Takshak also was coming. So on the way, Takshak came in the disguise of a brahmana. Although he's a serpent, although he's a snake, but he has, these celestial serpents or celestial beings have the ability to transform themselves and assume different forms. So Takshak took the shape of a brahmana. And he was coming, and on the way they met Takshak and Kashyap. So they were said, okay, let's go together, let's travel together. So then they started to talk, and then Takshak asked Kashyapa, where are you going? He said, I'm going to Hastinapur. He said, why are you going there? He said, I heard that the king is going to be bitten by a snake and he is going to die. So I am going there to save the king. Takshak became very angry. He immediately assumed his form as a serpent, as a snake, a huge, gigantic snake. And he said, I am Takshak. I'm going to bite him. Do you think you can counteract my poison? Saying that, Takshak immediately, he just bite into a banyan tree, a huge banyan tree. And the tree immediately turned into ashes. And he says, see, this is the power of my poison. And you think you are going to counteract that? Immediately the king's body is going to burn into ashes as soon as I bite. So Kashyap didn't say anything. He took some water from his water pot, did his achaman, he cleansed his mouth before chanting the mantra, and then he took some more water on his palm. He chanted some mantra and sprinkled the water on the heap of ash. And immediately the tree came to life. The tree was regenerated. So Takshak was surprised. And he then took another course to convince him. He said that, look, you may counteract my poison, but you won't be able to counteract the curse of a brahmana. So you go back home. And I'll give you all these most precious gems. So you go back home. So Kashyap considered that's true, like the curse of a brahmana is irretractable. So he went back. And now we can see that there were personalities who could have counteracted the curse. But Parikshit Maharaj did not take that course. He considered that whenever the Lord will desire me to leave this planet, I will leave. So now if that is his desire, that in 7 days' time I'm going to die, okay? At least I am fortunate that I have got the information that I am going to die in 7 days' time. I have got 7 days to prepare myself. He considered that to be a very, very great good fortune, that I have 7 days to prepare. We can consider, like most of the time, we don't actually want to prepare ourselves. And sometimes death comes without even our knowing about it. All of a sudden, we die. So in that respect, Parikshit Maharaj was fortunate, and he considered himself very fortunate that at least he has 7 days to prepare himself. So he did that. He, as I mentioned earlier, he left his kingdom, he went to the bank of the Ganges, he sat down without taking any food or water, without sleeping. He just was preparing himself for his final moment. And at that time, all the great personalities, saintly personalities from the universe, gathered there. They all came there in order to help the king at a difficult time like that. So many saintly personalities assembled there, and many of them gave different advices to Parikshit Maharaj, but Parikshit Maharaj was not interested in those advice. They, with all good intention, tried to give him the good advice. But Parikshit Maharaj considered that these advices are pertaining to the material facilities, material benefits. What kind of benefit? The benefit of elevating to higher planetary systems. The Earth planet is not the only planetary system in this universe. There are many other higher planetary systems. Now, there are possibilities of elevating to higher planetary systems where the facilities are better. But Parikshit Maharaj was not interested in these kind of advice, in those advices, because he considered that the ultimate goal of life is not to enjoy in this material nature, whether in a higher planetary system or lower planetary system, because in this material nature is transient. No situation in this material nature is going to be permanent. And this material nature ultimately is a place of misery. So what's the question of enjoyment in a place of misery? Jai Shri Shri Radha Golokananda ki jai, Jai Shri Shri Gaurnithai ki, Jai Shri Shri Prahlad Narasingha Dev ki, Srila Prabhupada ki. So he was not interested, but at that time Sukadeva Goswami appeared there. A very wonderful personality. He was a 16-year-old boy, very handsome, very, very handsome. A personality who was endowed with all the symptoms he was so absorbed in the spiritual consciousness, he was so absorbed in thinking about the Supreme Personality of Godhead and his pastimes that he didn't have any external consciousness. He didn't have any body consciousness. So much so that he did not even care to wear anything. He was stark naked. And he just arrived there. And when he arrived there, everybody, all the exalted saintly personalities, could immediately recognize that this is a very, very special person. And they stood up out of respect, although he was a 16-year-old boy. And they considered that this is the most exalted personality. Meaning, this personality has the highest spiritual knowledge. And Parikshit Maharaj also recognized him and he offered him the exalted seat of a teacher. And he questioned. Parikshit Maharaj asked him many relevant questions, dealing mainly with this particular topic. His main question was, I'm going to die within 7 days. Tell me how to prepare myself for that occasion. I have only 7 days left, and how must I utilize these 7 days? And then Sukadeva Goswami started to instruct him. And that is what Srimad Bhagavatam is. Therefore, while we are covering this topic, we are actually covering Srimad Bhagavatam, the essential teachings of Srimad Bhagavatam. Generally, when I give a seminar, I like to write on the board and walk about. But I thought of doing that. That's why I got this board here. But I'm a little concerned that many of you are taping. And if I stand up, then I won't be able to tape. Therefore, I just thought of one simple solution to this problem. Babai, how is your handwriting on a whiteboard? Okay. You can go and make, I'm making some points. You sit here. And the points that I make, you can just write them. So few points that I'll just make these points, those who are taking notes. So the few points that I was making, I already made. I'll just give you those points. Like one point is, the first point, of course, is Parikshit Maharaj's approach to death. How did Parikshit Maharaj approach his imminent death? Did he try to call some doctors and try to save himself? No. Rather, he prepared himself to face it. And then when he decided to face it, he was confronted with two possibilities. One is the apparent benefit, and the other is, one is the apparent goal, and the other is the ultimate goal. So what is the apparent goal? Apparent goal is elevation to higher planetary systems. And what is the ultimate goal? Ultimate goal is total freedom from material bondage and elevation to the spiritual world. The higher planetary systems, higher planetary systems are also a part of this material nature. Like if we consider this material nature to be a prison house, then elevation to higher planetary systems are something like from lower grades of prison existence to a higher grade of prison imprisonment. Like, I don't know whether you have it here, but in some countries like India, they have, you know, things like, you know, third class prison. Now, the worst is, I think, rigorous imprisonment. They have to work very hard. I mean, then in this way it comes to then second class prisoner, then first class prisoner. Now, if a prisoner thinks, oh, I am in third class, so let me be elevated to second class and then to first class, is it an intelligent endeavor to try to be elevated to a higher level of prison existence? No. So what would be the intelligent thing to do? Get out of the prison. Get out of the prison. Who wants to be in a prison? So what did you write, Babai? Okay. So maybe you can now... maybe you can make a point here. The material nature is like a prison house. The material nature is like a prison house for some. And to some others, this material nature is like a boarding school. Okay, we'll discuss about this point now. Now, who are put into prison? The prison is designed for who? The criminals, isn't it? Does a gentleman go to a prison? He may go for an occasional sightseeing, but he doesn't go to live in the prison, right? The prison is meant for the criminals. Now, what's the definition of a criminal? What is crime? Breaking of law, to break the law. The state or the king has given some laws, and those laws are meant to be followed or abide by. Now, those laws have to be followed. Why? Because the laws are actually meant for the peaceful and prosperous living of the citizens of the state or the kingdom. Now, when somebody breaks the law, it creates a disturbance, right? A people who have a perverted mentality of not abiding by the law of the king has a perverted mentality. Now, when somebody has a perverted mentality, then that mentality has to be rectified. Therefore, the prisons are designed. Prisons are a place to rectify the perverted mentality of the lawbreakers, criminals. And in the prison, the individuals get punished. They not only always get punished, they also get rewarded. In this way, they know what is right and what is wrong. When they do the right thing, in the prison also they are appreciated and they are rewarded. And when they do something wrong, then they get the stick. So, the purpose is to rectify, to correct, to reform them. Now, those who are the lawbreakers, and whose law here it is? Law is given by there's the ultimate law that has been given by the Lord, the Supreme Personality of Godhead. And the law given by the Lord is actually called religion. Whenever we consider religion, whichever religion it is, whether it can be Christianity, Judaism, Islam, Hindu, whichever religion we approach, we see that all the religions are speaking about God and the laws that He has given and how one should abide by those laws, isn't it? Doesn't all religions speak about God? And doesn't all religion give the injunctions of what the Lord's instructions are and motivates one or directs one or instructs one to follow those instructions of the Lord? So, when somebody abides by the laws of the Lord, then actually they become rewarded. But when they break them, then they become punished. That's the ultimate consideration of imprisonment. Now, for the criminals, the prison, this material nature is like a prison. But the material nature also has another aspect or another side of it. And that side of it is something like a boarding school. In the boarding school, parents send their children to the boarding school. Right? They are away from home. But what they learn in the school, they learn how to become qualified to live in the free world. How to live a life of prosperity. So those who abide by the laws of the Lord, for them, this material nature is like a boarding school. Those who are there in the boarding school, they are away from their home. But actually they're preparing themselves to go back to home and lead a life of prosperity and become successful individuals there. So now it's up to us whether we'll turn this place into a prison house or a boarding school. Now, advantage of a boarding school is that when you finish your term, when you finish your education, then you go back home. It's just taken for granted and that you'll go home. You are not here to stay forever. So, now, the Lord also is present in the hearts of every living entity. And He is actually considering or determining how an individual is leading his life, or what is going on inside. Inside means what's going on in his consciousness. Externally we may bluff or cheat or fool others, but internally we can't. Now the Supreme Personality of Godhead is situated in everyone's heart as the super soul, and He is witnessing everyone. Now there as a super soul also the Lord has two ways to deal with the individuals. Like to the criminals, he is acting as a witness and he is seeing how they are acting, and accordingly either he is punishing them or he is rewarding them. And those who are who have accepted this place as a boarding school, the Lord sitting in their heart is acting as their teacher. He guides them from within. Now those who lead a materialistic life, those who think that the ultimate goal of life is to enjoy in this material nature and do not really want to accept the existence of the Supreme Personality of Godhead or another reality beyond this material nature, which is the spiritual reality, and those who do not have any informations about the spiritual reality and they do not know that they actually came from the spiritual reality, therefore the spiritual reality is their actual home, they simply keep on wandering in this material nature from one cell to another cell. And the Lord in their heart acts as the witness. Upadrashta Anumanta. Upadrashta means a witness. The Lord is seeing every action of every individual. But those who are fortunate enough to understand that beyond this material nature there is another reality, the spiritual reality. And the Supreme Personality of Godhead is the center of that reality. And He is the Supreme Creator, He is the Supreme Proprietor, He is the Supreme Maintainer. And that Supreme Personality of Godhead is our dearmost friend, or He is our dearmost Father. When we recognize the individuals, those who recognize that, to them this material nature becomes like a boarding school. And they take advantage of their situation in the school by learning. They learn. And who is the teacher? The Lord and His associates and His devotees. They are helped by those individuals, those exalted devotees of the Lord, and ultimately they are helped by the Lord Himself. And they simply prepare themselves to get out of the school and go out to their home and become a successful individual. Now, death is something like the end, or death is the time of final examination. And the life is the span of time, the span when we get the opportunity to prepare ourselves for the exams. We study throughout the year for what? We prepare ourselves throughout the year in school for what? To sit for the exams, right? And when we prepare ourselves well, then we pass with a flying color, straight A's. And when we fail to prepare ourselves, then we flunk. So, now, a person who has prepared himself well, will he be afraid to sit for the exams? Rather, he looks forward to the exams. A good student, I'm sure all of you are, or had been, didn't you, as good students, didn't you look forward to your exams? And well, certain degree of nervousness may be there before the exams, but when you get the question paper, when you get the papers, and you see that you know the answer to all the questions, then how do you feel? Don't you feel excited and in bliss, in ecstasy? Therefore, those who prepare themselves, they get into ecstasy when the time comes. Although some initial nervousness may be there. And now consider what actually happens. A person who has prepared himself well. Preparation means, what does this preparation mean for these exams? This preparation is actually preparing to establish our relationship with the Supreme Personality of Godhead. The real preparation is to recognize the Lord, recognize the Supreme Personality of Godhead, and establish our relationship with Him. Now, throughout our life, we are actually preparing for that. The Lord, let us, how shall I face, how shall I face the exams? Throughout our life, if that becomes our only concern, and then the time comes for the final exams. And what is that exams? That is the time when we are going to leave this body. Death. So at that time, what do we do? We are waiting. We are waiting for this moment. This moment comes. And we are out of this body. Will it happen? Or will you always remain in your body? Well, there is another consideration, third possibility is lose your consciousness. Lose your consciousness means something like everything becomes, like you fall asleep. And no more awareness, no more consciousness. Now, to a devotee, that is the most undesirable situation. A devotee doesn't want to lose his consciousness. Rather, he wants to fix his consciousness onto the lotus feet of Krishna. That's why the spiritual endeavor has been described as Krishna consciousness. So throughout our life we are trying to be Krishna conscious. And then the final moment comes. And then we see Krishna. How will you feel? Won't you feel that all your endeavors throughout your life has been successful? Now you are face to face with Him. Or you are in a situation when you are being taken to the Supreme Personality of Godhead. Anyway, these aspects we'll discuss tomorrow. Today we won't get into the individual's examples of individuals leaving their body and how they left their bodies. Like today, we are just covering the basic understanding of this aspect of what life is, what death is. Now let us again, for clarity, let's go back to that point. What is life? What is life? Yes? Preparation for death. Preparation for death, yes. But what is the definition of life? What is life? You are alive. What makes you think that you are alive?
Consciousness.
Consciousness. Now, what is consciousness? Consciousness is the awareness of being. Awareness of being. I am, therefore I am alive. When I fall asleep and I do not have any awareness whether I am alive or dead, then what happens? Do I exist? No. When we are fast asleep, sleep also has two aspects. One is dream and the other is dreamless sleep. Like in dream is actually a situation in the subtle existence. When the subtle body is active, that is called dream. When the gross body and subtle body, both their bodies are active, then it is called wakeful state. We are awake. When you are awake, then both gross body and the subtle body. So anyway, for clarity, I will say gross body, we have two types of material bodies. We have two types of material bodies. Chintamani, can you tell us what are those two types of material bodies?
Gross and subtle.
Gross and subtle. Okay. Ratnavali, what are the gross bodies comprised of?
Earth, water, fire, air, and ether.
And the subtle body is comprised of Radhika. Do you know? Subtle body? Okay, I'll ask your mother then. What is the subtle body made of? No, subtle body is made of mind, intelligence, and false ego. You see, mind also is matter, subtle matter. And intelligence and false ego. These are the three subtle elements. Whereas earth, meaning solid substance, water means liquid, fire means fiery, air and ether. These five are gross material elements. So with these five gross material elements, we have this gross body. And beyond this gross body, we have a subtle body, made of mind, intelligence and false ego. When we are awake, then both the gross body and the subtle body are active. Like this body is also active or aware, and we are also aware of a subtle body. But when we fall asleep, then the gross body becomes inactive. We become unconscious of the gross body. But the subtle body remains active. And that subtle, the activities of the subtle body appears to us like a dream. And when the subtle body also becomes inactive, that is the state of deep sleep. At that time, we don't have any consciousness of this material nature at all. Now, let us consider the relationship between death and sleep. Or rather, the other way around. Sleep, we know what sleep is like. Sleep and death. What is the link or relationship between sleep and death?
Whereas when
we are asleep, although we are not conscious of our existence, or we are not conscious, our consciousness is completely inactive. That state is sleep, but even at that state, the soul is in the body. And in sleep, we wake up in the same body. Now, death also is like sleep. But it is a prolonged sleep. And in death, we don't wake up in this body. We wake up in another body. And that is called the transmigration of the soul. The soul transmigrates from one body to another. The body is constantly changing. In this body also, the soul is going from one body to another. For example, continuously the changes are taking place, and since the changes are taking place in the body continuously, we don't really register it as such. But we do when we see somebody after a long time. Like you see a little child, and then you come after 7 years, what will you see? That he has completely changed, right? Does he have his child body anymore? No, he has got into another body altogether. His body has changed completely. Then you see him after another 10 years. Now he is a young man. It's impossible to recognize him. He has got beard, he has got mustache, he has got long hair. He's got a big body.
And so in this way, this body also, in this body also the soul transmigrates from one body to another. Body changes from boyhood to youth to old age. So, Kardama Muni, you agree with me? Huh? Yeah, okay. So, when do you remember yourself when you were 5 years old? Yeah. So, when you were 5 years old, what kind of body you had? Do you have a picture?
Yeah, where's the Ranga?
So where is that 5-year-old body today? It's not there. Today you have a completely different body. But are you the same person?
Yes, I'm the same person.
You are the same person. Although body changed, but you are the same person. Right? So in spite of the change of the bodies, the soul is the same. Now, will it be a logical conclusion that in spite of the change of the body, the soul doesn't change? Right?
Yes.
The soul's existence or the soul doesn't have, soul's identity has nothing to do with the body. Right? So, when, now let us consider, then when the soul leaves the body, then what happens? That is what we call death. Death is actually soul's departure from the body. When the soul leaves the body becomes dead. Right? Okay. Now, the soul, when the soul leaves the body, then what happens to the body actually? To begin with, this is a dead body. Isn't it? This body is made of what? Earth, water, fire, air and ether. Right? Is earth just regular earth? Is it dead matter? Or not? Or is it earth is alive? Earth is dead matter. Earth, water, fire, air, ether. All these are actually inert matter. Now this body is made of inert matter or dead matter. So this, will it be illogical to conclude that this is a dead body? Actually it's a dead body. But why this body is alive? Because of the presence of the soul. Right? So it's due to the presence of the soul that the body is alive. So now, who are we? Let's make a very simple and simple consideration. Make a simple consideration. Who are we? Are we this body or are we this soul? We saw that the body changes but I remain the same. So who is that I? When we say I, who do we actually indicate? Due to our conditioning with this body, we identify ourselves with the body. But actually, we are spirit souls. We are spirit souls. So when the spirit soul leaves the body and I am the spirit soul, do I continue to exist? Do I continue to exist or do I die with the body? When the body dies, do I die? No. Rather, when I'm in this body, the body becomes alive. The body remains alive. So, death, life, or let's begin with birth, life and death. They actually indicate birth is the soul's acceptance of a new body. When the soul accepts a new body, we call it birth. And when the soul leaves the old body, what do you call it? Death. And the period of the soul's existence from the time of birth to death is called life. So do you understand now what life is, Sitarani? describe. What is life? Wonderful. Very good. So, now let us consider we are in boarding school. Right? And when the exams will be? And our preparation time is? The lifetime is the time for preparing ourselves for the final exams. And when we fare well in the exams, then what happens? We find that Krishna is standing there. Says, okay, you did very well. All your life you have been trying to understand me, recognize me, and establish your relationship with me. So I'm very happy with you. So come on, let's go home. My boy, you did very well. I'm very happy that I sent you to a boarding school. So that is our the ultimate objective of our existence in this material nature. Now this has been very wonderfully described through an allegorical story. That was the story of Puranjan. In Srimad Bhagavatam, how many of you remember the story of Puranjan? Okay, and how many of you don't? I'll explain briefly. There was a great personality, very exalted king, called King Prachinabarhi. So King Prachinabarhi had 10 sons. And when King Prachinabarhi, these children grew up, King Prachinabarhi advised them to get married and take up the royal responsibility. So the children felt that in order to enter into household life, in order to take the responsibility, we have to prepare ourselves properly. So they went to the forest to perform austerities. Then they came across a beautiful lake. The lake was filled with or decorated with many beautiful flowers like blue and red and white lotuses. And there are beautifully colorful singing birds were there flying around. And then at one point, to their great amazement, they saw Lord Shiva coming out of that water. And then Lord Shiva gave them the instruction, how to meditate, how to glorify the Supreme Personality of Godhead and meditate upon Him. So, in this way, being blessed by Lord Shiva, they got absorbed in meditating upon the Supreme Personality of Godhead. And at that time, Narad Muni considered that these 10 boys are becoming so serious about their life, and look at the father. He is completely absorbed in sense gratification and performing all kinds of materialistic activities to accrue piety, to acquire piety, and so that he can enjoy. So Narad Muni thought that I must give him some good advice. But he also considered that this king, he's so gross. You see, when people become absorbed in sense gratification, their intelligence becomes quite blunt. So, and a person with blunt or rusted intelligence, in English there's an expression called dunderhead. So dunderheaded persons cannot understand the subtleties of life. So Narad Muni, instead of giving him a straightforward advice, this told him a story. And this story is the story of Puranjan. Actually, what Narad Muni was describing is the situation of a living entity in this material nature. So, Puranjana means one who dwells in a body. So this body is like a city. Pura means a city or a dwelling place, house you can say. Puri means a house. So the soul lives in the house, this body. Not only this body, this is one type of body. The human form is one type of body. There are 400,000 different types of human bodies. And there are 8 million other types of bodies. They are aquatics, plants, worms, insects, reptiles, birds, animals, and then finally, human beings. In the process of spiritual evolution, not organic evolution, but the process of spiritual evolution, the human form is the highest form of existence in this material nature. So, Puranjana means a spirit soul. A soul, the way he told the story, I'll just describe that first. He says there was a prince. He was wandering around in different places. Then finally he came to a land between the tract of the Himalayan mountains and the saltwater ocean. That's the land of India. And while wandering there, he came across a city, a beautiful city with 9 gates. And then he saw that there was a beautiful woman, an extremely beautiful woman, and she was she was attended by 10 very powerful and efficient attendants. And there was a 5-headed serpent who was protecting this lady, this queen. She was the queen of the city. And then Puranjan became so attracted by her beauty that Puranjan approached her and wanted to marry her. So eventually they got married. They started to live in the city of 9 gates. And Puranjan was quite happily living, but sometimes he used to feel very depressed. Sometimes he used to have a fight with his queen. Sometimes he had different types of adversaries, some enemies' attacks. And once a very big onslaught came on the city, on his kingdom. The Javana king attacked the city. And a very, very big fight ensued. And they were fighting to protect their city. And the serpent who actually used to protect the city, the serpent was becoming gradually weak, weaker and weaker, couldn't really withstand the onslaught. And then the Javana king's sister, Kalakanya, she came and she embraced Puranjan. And when she embraced Puranjan, Puranjan became completely, he lost all his power. He lost all his ability to fight. And then the soldiers of the Javana king dragged him out of the city. And then Puranjan took birth as a woman in his next life.
So here Puranjana dies. So next life Puranjana is born as a woman. And Puranjana, when her husband died, she was, actually her husband after at some point left home. She was a princess. She was married to a king, but the king left her kingdom and went to Vanaprastha, went to the forest. So when the king died, this Puranjani, Puranjana now a woman, she lit the funeral pyre, placed her husband in there and lit the fire. And then she was also considering to enter into the fire and give up her life. So at that time one Brahmana came, and the Brahmana told her that he was her friend from the long past, and at this time of this difficulty he came to help her. And so in this way the Brahmana actually rescued Puranjani and led her to the ultimate goal of her life. So king could understand that it was an allegorical story. So he asked Narad Muni, why did you tell a story like that? What is the hidden meaning behind this story? So then Narad Muni explained that this Puranjan is actually a spirit soul. And the spirit soul wanders in different types of bodies. Sometimes he is elevated to the higher planetary system, sometimes he goes to the lower planetary systems. In this way, he is wandering around in this universe. And then he comes to the land of India, or we can say the land of wisdom, a land where knowledge is available. And there he comes across the city of nine gates. So the city of nine gates is the human body. So human body has nine gates, means there are nine holes through which, through these gates, one actually goes out to enjoy. The senses derive enjoyment from the objects of the senses. Like two ears, two eyes, two nostrils, mouth, anus and genital. So these are the nine gates in the human body. And the queen is the intelligence, who actually makes all the arrangement for the soul to dwell in this human body and try to enjoy in this human body. The queen had 10 attendants. They are the 10 senses. 5 knowledge acquiring senses and 5 working senses. The serpent that protects this city is the 5 types of air. Pran, Apan, Saman, Van and Udan. These 5 types of air are actually sustaining this body and making this body function. All the activities and functions of the body are actually controlled by these 5 types of air. And then there is an attack from the Javana king. Javana kings means the king of death. So the king of death comes along with his soldiers. And his sister, then in his next life he became a woman. And then at the time of the funeral of her husband, he came across this Brahmana. Who is this Brahmana? This Brahmana is the super soul, the spiritual master. And the spiritual master guides one towards the lotus feet of the Supreme Personality of Godhead, which is the ultimate goal of our life and which indicates our ultimate freedom. So in this way, very beautifully, through many, many anecdotes and incidents recorded incidents. Srimad Bhagavatam is teaching us what is life and what is death and how to conquer it. So the art of dying actually means how to conquer death. And by when you conquer death, then what do we achieve? We achieve immortality. So I'll stop here today. If anyone has any question, please feel free to ask. Yes?
Is it possible to attain immortality before death?
Yes. You see, actually, when you are before death, when you are alive, the question of mortality doesn't come. You are already immortal at that time, right? But immortality, the consideration, actually one is, we all are immortal. In reality, we all are immortal. But the problem starts when you forget our spiritual identity and begin to identify ourselves with the body. Then, when the body dies, we think that we are dying. Or we are dead. But when you become situated in our spiritual identity, then there is no death. Then actually by nature we all are immortal. Amritasya putra. The Vedas, one of the first instructions of the Vedas is Shinnanti Vishe Amritasya putra. Oh, the sons of immortality, listen to the wisdom of the spiritual reality. That is the wisdom of the Vedas. To begin with, we are Amritasya putra, we are the children of immortality. So if our father is immortal, then aren't we also immortal? And only thing is that unfortunately we are trying to identify ourselves with the body, and that's the problem. Now we have to realize that we are not this body. The body is only an external covering. We are actually spiritual beings. And when you become situated in our spiritual identity, then there is no death. There is no consideration of death. There is no question of death. Hare Krishna. Yes, Udayananda Prabhu.
How do we become situated in our spiritual identity?
Yeah. How do we become situated in our spiritual identity? When we become connected to the Supreme Spirit, the Supreme Personality of Godhead, then you automatically become situated in our spiritual identity. Now, to make this point clear, it's a very nice question you brought up, and I'll just take a little, I'll explain and answer it a little elaborately. You see, a living entity, we, the living entities, spirit souls, we are very minute spiritual entities. Like a spark. Spark is a part of fire. It's a tiny little fire. Right? But when the spark flies out of the fire and falls into the heap of ash, what happens to its fiery qualities? It loses its fiery qualities. Right? It becomes ash. Right, that speck of fire, that spark that it was, it loses its fiery qualities, it stops to be a spark and becomes ash, coming in contact with the heap of ash. Now, when that speck is taken back into the fire, then what happens? It automatically regains its fiery qualities. Right? Similarly, we all are spiritual beings, but we are tiny little spiritual sparks. So when we get out of the spiritual reality, spiritual nature, and come in contact with the material nature, then we lose our spiritual qualities and become materialized, just as a spark coming in contact with a heap of ash becomes ash.
Right? So that is our condition. We are spiritual, but we are considering ourselves to be material. Right? Forgetting our spiritual identity. Now tell me, how can we get our spiritual identity back? If we go back to the fire again, then again we'll become spiritualized when we go back to the spirit. Therefore, the way to become spiritualized is to re-establish our contact with the Supreme Spirit, the Supreme Personality of Godhead. By forgetting Him, we have fallen into this material nature and lost our spiritual identity. Now, if we re-establish our relationship with Him, then we'll again regain our spiritual identity. I told you, like by re-establish our relationship with Krishna. We develop our relationship with Krishna. Now the way to develop is by love. Love is the thing that brings us together. Hatred separates us. So when you develop a loving relationship, that love is actually a force that unites us with Krishna. Yes, Charlotte. Charlak.
Of course, I want to thank you very much for your wisdom.
Thank you.
It's a pleasure to be here in this space.
Thank you.
My question is the following. We speak about consciousness and rationalism. And we typically talk about consciousness as a concept, as distinct from an experience. And I followed your conversation, your presentation. You seem to allude to consciousness as a presence, not as a concept. My question is, how do you help people to engender consciousness as a presence, not to just talk about consciousness, but to give the fact that we're so overwhelmed by sense gratification as we put it, in this material contingent world, and given that we live in a world that privileges scientific evidence. We tend to think that what you can touch is more real than what you can see. How do you see this, that we are at a disadvantage? I mean, now we have quantum physics and double quantum, but can you share with us how we can really engage and sustain consciousness, the presence, that we're not human beings that are a spiritual experience, but rather spiritual beings that are human beings?
We briefly touched this point before so we'll try to elaborate it. Let's see. You see, consciousness is, in simple words, it can be identified as awareness. That I am aware, right? That I'm sitting in this room, surrounded by so many people.
When I say I am aware, the reference for me typically is more my body. What I'm getting in the lecture is that when you say I am aware, I'm not speaking to my body, but something that I am not.
Right. The thing is, you see, consciousness comes from the soul. Consciousness, just as light comes or heat comes out of fire. You see, when there is fire, heat comes out, or light comes out. Now, just as light comes out of fire, similarly, one can say that consciousness comes from the soul. Now, that consciousness, becomes subjected or affected by various factors of this material nature, like three subtle elements and five gross elements. Like those three subtle elements are mind, intelligence, and false ego. That mistaken concept of our identity is called false ego. And so when that happens, then the soul's consciousness is projected towards the material direction. Like, okay, let me just take one step backward and try to elaborate it a little more. You see, the soul is from the spiritual world. The soul is not generated in the material nature due to some chemical combinations. Soul is from the spiritual world. Now, the spiritual world is the world or the reality where God is the center. So when we look towards God, when we have our relationship with God, then we are in the spiritual world. But when we look away from God, then we look at His external creation, external energy, which is the material world. And when we come in contact with the material nature, like you see, when you turn our face away from the spiritual reality and look towards the material nature, and material nature being inferior and we being superior, we develop a tendency to lord over the material nature. Now, in reality, our relationship with God is that He is the Supreme Master and we are His eternal servants. That is our identity, actually. We are eternal servants of the Lord. But when we look at the material nature, then we forget our identity as a servant, but we assume the identity of a master. Now, that is a mistaken identity, right? And that is called the false ego. The mistaken concept of our identity. And then we begin to plan how we are going to exploit this material nature. That gives us the second covering of the subtle matter called intelligence. How we are going to exploit this world for our enjoyment. And then through the mind, the consciousness constantly flows towards the material direction. So in this way, you see, we get a subtle body or a covering of mind, intelligence and false ego. And we want then, according to our state of our subtle body, the material nature provides us with a gross body. Now, through this body, we virtually or practically try to exploit or enjoy this material nature. So in this way, you see, in this way the soul becomes entrapped in these two bodies, subtle and gross. Now, and as a result of that, the consciousness begins to flow towards this direction, material direction, through the subtle body and the gross body, through the mind and through the senses. Our consciousness is going out towards different directions and trying to enjoy, right? Now, that is the state of affairs in our material existence. Now, when one recognizes the fact that it is not a desirable situation here that we are in, you know, we want to enjoy, but we can't enjoy. Enjoyment is an illusory concept. A poor man wants to be a rich man, and a rich man wants to be a king. Right? No one is satisfied in his present existing situation, you know. Either he dwells in the past or dreams about the future. Right? But the real situation is that we are in a miserable condition here. Now, if we are miserable here, then why should we stay here? Let's find the right place where we are going to be joyful. That is why we have to make the spiritual endeavor to go back to the spiritual world, to become situated in our natural, joyful state of existence. Thank you. Hare Krishna. Yes?
Here the Maya did the birth. Maya.
Maya means the external energy of the Lord, the illusory energy, which actually is manifested in the form of this material nature. It is illusory. It's not there. We are trying to enjoy. But is there any enjoyment? Like a mirage. In a desert, you see the mirage, and it gives you an impression that there is water, and you are very thirsty, you are dying of thirst. So you run after the mirage. But what happens? The mirage runs away from you.
No matter how fast you run after the mirage will constantly run away from you. So that our situation in the material nature is like that, and it's been created by Maya, the illusory energy of the Lord. As long as we remain in material consciousness, yes, we will be in Maya. But once you take shelter of Krishna, then you are not in Maya. Thank you all very much. So I'll stop now. Thank you, and I'll see you all tomorrow. Hare Krishna, all glories to Srila Prabhupada.